road maintenance of the TCU bunch, a half a kilometre to 1 kilometre of road maintained. The contracts are renewed on an annual basis, exactly for the reason that I referred to that, where and female or women are targeted specifically for that purpose, because we know when women are targeted, the rat infection, so to speak, in terms of the entire family, in a much better way than would be where men would only would be employed. But so the duration is described, and yes, we do target females specifically, youth females, youth and people with disabilities. That's what you, and we have set certain percentages achievement across sectors. So that's what we call designated groups, women, youth and people with disabilities.
Just a query here. I'm hearing about this for the first time. I'm very new. How does employment extended on an annual basis over numerous years differ from normal employment in that we have issues with people who are contract workers, a security guard or whatever for a fixed period or a renewed period? How does that differ to what this has now become from a short-term short-term duration to now a limitless duration?
Public employment programs by nature, which I don't remember, is designed to play a role in terms of late unemployment, and therefore should be the what we call the employer of last resort, which means it should be available for people to take it up where they could not access, where they could not find employment in the formal economy. What we have to keep in mind is remember these programs and projects are linked to the budget allocations over the MTF as it is designed by national departments, provincial departments, and municipalities. Which means some programs and projects are short in duration by nature. Some examples we have seen, for instance, in the infrastructure. If a labor road must be paved and it is a 9-month project, the participation or the work opportunity will be a 9-month period. So, but in other cases, departments have institutionalized programs, such as ECD programs, early child development programs, working for water, working on fire, a whole range of other programs, and in such cases where it's available, participants can take it up because contracts have been renewed on an annual basis. We I need to make this particular comment with regard to duration. That is why we advocate so strongly for maintenance programs in terms of public employment. The maintenance work has to be done as a matter of course, and therefore that potential to for poor people to participate on a continuous basis if they do not find work in the formal economy, and has to be done. As a matter of course, whether it's on buildings, whether it's on roads, whether it's like cleaning, a whole range of other initiatives, and we really advocate strongly for maintenance work to feature much more strongly because it provides longer duration of participation. The underreporting issue, is an area of concern, but yes, remember, we do have an EPOP reporting system with very clear data fields. So it's not on a loose basis or ad hoc basis, which means that the implementing bodies access the reporting system and opens up clearly what needs to be captured for each and every project. So we know exactly what needs to be captured. So there's a reporting system that makes a provision for that, and we know there is capacity issues where often municipalities cannot capture, but we assist municipalities to get the data on the system where they do cyber. the context of the drought for the 6 million work opportunity target, it's obviously an area of concern for us as the coordinating department. We should keep in mind that the EPL is implemented across the spheres of government, across all sectors. So what we do is to engage with all implementing bodies at the key forums, such as municipalities and the IDPs, so they would prioritize projects that will the effect is to account, obviously, the sudden changes or the most popular issues, such as the drought currently, certainly. And at the MIMIC forum, we have engaged with the MECs and with the HODs of provinces, also to put this matter to the fore. And the previous MIMIC, the MECs have admitted that they will prioritize public employment programs. As I said, this is just a perspective from the side of the EPWP. Obviously, other departments, there would be many other issues across government, such as to death and a range of other departments. Lastly, I've answered the last question with regard to women already. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I will try and also provide some more clarity on the questions that have been posed that are finance-related or budget-related. I think the first one question that was posed was around the parliamentary villages as to what is the spend on the furniture on the parliamentary villages and what it is that you do with the furniture when you remove it there. I must think that the furniture, when it's moved out of there, we've got a storage here in Cape Town, we've got a storage where we store all the furniture that has been removed from the parliamentary villages. And depending on the state of those or condition of those items, we normally utilize them in other areas in the department, like if we move things from ministerial house, for instance. We keep them in the storage and then we use it for offices when there's new people coming in and utilize those kind of furniture. In other cases, we actually dispose of the furniture, as you know, sofas and that, to deserving charities who make an application and a strict condition under which we actually dispose of those to those charities. In terms of the spend, we'll realize that the last election is about when was our 2014, and if you look at the allocation in terms of our E&E spending for the machinery and equipment for prestige, which really had to do with largely the villages in terms of furniture that we purchased. We spent about 23 million from a baseline of about 9 million in the previous year, just to indicate that we had to renew the furniture that was there. The year that follows, the expenditure went down to about 12.9 million. From 23 million, and the year that we're looking forward to, which is the 16-17, it has even dropped further to about 10 million. And the total allocation that I'm talking about is for the villages as well as all ministerial houses, that's what we put aside for furniture and all those kind of things that we need to have. Additional expenditure for the villages incorporates the transportation that we are paying for the buses that transport members to parliament and back to villages. And there we look at about 10 million rand allocation that we spent on those on the board itself. Then there was a question on the spending money in Canada. We do not have any budget allocation specific for Canada. We haven't spent money on maintenance yet, nothing. What we have is we allocate budgets to our regional offices for normal day-to-day maintenance of properties that we have control over or are custodians of. So there's no set money for in Canada per se. So there is no spending that we actually have ever since. The questions that related to the allocations of dolomite and whatever into the budget, that relates to just the years. That is, the year we are looking at is 16-17. The issues that have been referred to, I think they go back to 3 years ago. They are not part of what we are looking at here now. So they are not in the space we are looking at.
Sorry, sir. Just to be specific, I said on Uganda
I want to know if you have got a budget for new
construction. I moved away from maintenance, except for new, you know, security related construction. Thank you.
I can categorically state clearly in this budget, none of that. Okay. And then on the issue around the budget cuts. Yes.
What I'm a bit concerned about is you didn't have a budget before for Canada. There were no budgets before. Yet you found $246 million because you didn't have a budget. But the Dolomite project and the urban renewal project collapsed because that money went to Nkandla. So if you say that we don't have a budget, that what I think we need is your personal assurance. You're not going to go dipping into other programs to find budgets to give another $200 million to Nkandla. That is what I think we're looking for here.
Okay. The DDG for GLC will take the matter up from that. There's a question on the budget cuts, the CIDP, and what impact it had on the operations of the CIDP. Fortunately, this year, the CIDP is in the room. They are going to be having an appearance before yourselves, and I think let me defer that matter for them to respond to. And then there was a question on the target that was set for irregular expenditure, where we had the target for Q1. 20% reduction of the baseline, Q2 there was 0, then Q3 there was 10%, then Q4 there was 20%. Why did we have nothing on Q2? I think it's the way we program our work. If you look at Q1 is the period from the 1st of April to the 30th of June. That's the time when we said we could actually look at the process to deal with the reverse expenditures of the condonement process that is to uphold. And as you know, the process that prescribes a national treasury to condone and deal with the regular expenditure is a laborious process. So we allocated 20% of that to the reduction of the regular expenditure. We got nothing for Q2. If you look at the timeline for Q2, it starts from the 1st of July and ends at the end of September. And what we did is we said, let's be reasonable. What's the focus of our attention during that period? Nothing else but audit. And let's decide. Let's focus our attention on audit, dealing with regular expenditure, for audit purposes, which does not incorporate the issues of, you know, tax and whatever, in terms of the baseline. Then we up our game, getting Q3 next up, fixing up within the last, which is Q4. And that's the reason why it's programmed the way you see it. Then there was a question on the IPR, why don't you have any spending, or there's a reduction in the spending. We'll realize that in the year 2016, I think there are about 83 million rand spent on the ICR, and the year that goes 16-17, I think it's about 9 million rand that we set aside for this project. It's not because we've done all the work. The ICR program is not executing programs. We plan programs to be aligned with the process of regeneration of the city center of Tshwane and other areas. So part of the work that's here is about planning and not execution. Why was there so much money in the previous year? Well, because we acquired the council of Solver Corp to develop the precinct that we want to develop. That's the part of it. And one of the things that we need to do was to apply, to pay and institute what you call the bulk services for the new township development that has been there. And that's why the money was so much. But in years that come, we're going to have to spend that money because the program does not execute. It just plans and does it in a way that aligns with the regeneration. The Commonwealth War Graves, I didn't get the question, but maybe if you can answer us. Why we spend this money is for the upkeep of the graves of the memorial that come back many years. And I think this question keeps coming back every year. It comes back every year. And there's a number of graves all over the world, and that's the upkeep of these graves. There's one that will be, you know, a memorial that will be unveiled, you know, sometime in July in Delwood. That was in France, so that's all part of what class 34. Yeah, so that's what it is. Then it was suspended within 30 days. Why we while saying, you know, 100%, we don't achieve it. I think it's a very difficult thing, as you know. I mean, this whole thing is really our major challenge, and I think we're trying to get our level best to achieve this target. The point is, we cannot set a target of 8%, because then you're gonna clap us for that. We can't comply. We can't plan for non-compliance. So, I mean, we're trying to get to 100%, and that's what we are doing. We've done a whole lot of things, introduced systems, automated inverse tracking systems to do those things. And I think really we have to put ourselves under this pressure to achieve this, and that's really what we're striving for. And then the question on the, I think the program 2 is the main goal, why there's been a reduction, especially around us and ME, there was a reduction. But if you compare year on year program 2, remember what you said was there's been a change in program structure of the department with the allocation of funds. Now what happened was, under program 2 in the previous year, we had the branch called Governance, Risk and Compliance sitting in program 2 with all the money that go in there. What it did is it moved, relocated that branch from program 2 as part of administration program 1. So you see an upsurge in program 1 in terms of the allocation and reduction in program 2, and that's why that's that kind of movement. And then SFT, why have not complied with the call by Treasury for cost containment and all that? I think we've been reducing the cost containment measures. Remember, now this next year, the baseline from where we are working has already been curtailed and cut down to introduce those cost containment measures. So we are operating from a reduced baseline. We've cut down our nature of travel, people are not staying, you know, to different hotels, no longer for tourists too. So that's what we are carrying on. And additional to that, we've implemented or rolled out video conference facilities in our offices. Now, that is going to have a significant drop. We can only see the benefits of those VC, you know, utilization in the year that follows, because there will be less trouble. But the longest short of it is that we've reduced our baseline 14-15 already, 15-16 for the reduction. So that's where we are working from. We're not going to see the reduction this year, because it's already been factored in the changes that came back. And then there was a question on the why are we no longer allocating funds for public corporations and private enterprises. There's a 50 million rand that came back from the previous year, and there's nothing in the NPF period. That 50 million rand was specific to the IDT system as part of the capitalization and helping IDT to sustain itself financially. We are shocked at that, because what we've done is we are rewriting the business in Europe, the business case for IDT, and the premise on the principle of self-sustainable. The National Treasury has even given the IDT dispensation to charge the major fees, because it is a drive towards getting the IDT to self-sustain themselves, so there's no more reliance on the national fiscal, which is asked to allocate money to them. So that's why it's no longer there over the MTF period. I'm not sure if I've missed anyone else, nothing that's generally...
Chair, if I could just point out or confirm that many of the questions raised by Honourable Carla Barnard have indeed been the subject matter of a parliamentary question. We are actually preparing a consolidated response, and I will then share a request or beg your indulgence that we will be allowed to complete that, and also those questions that are not included in that parliamentary response, we would then deal with it as part of the consolidated reply that we'd like to make to some of the questions that have been raised here, if that's acceptable. I will then also deal with the issues around valuation raised by Honourable Sotani, Chair. I think that it was a question around what are we doing in cases where there are no municipal valuation. And, you know, we have been grappling with this issue, because it is correct that there are a number of municipalities that don't actually have or have poor, unreliable municipal valuation rules. So we're actually busy with the process to deal with it by way of a fair, what we call a fair value model, where the initial starting point will be the municipal valuation rules where they exist and we feel that they can be relied upon. The second tact will be to then use what we call a comparison method, where we would look at similar properties in the same area and try and derive a value based on that. And then, of course, in instances where we're dealing with your more specialized facilities or buildings or other properties, we'd then look at the actual replacement cost as a method of arriving at a proper value. And then lastly, I think there was a question, Chair, around what happened before, historically, in relation to the immovable asset register. It is correct that, you know, there was a previous lack of clarity on the nature and extent of the property portfolio. And based on our analysis, we think that this is due to several issues, such as the extent and complexity of the portfolio, legacy issues, and the like. We think that in the past there were various attempts made to actually come up with the inventory of assets, but we think that they were also beset or faced challenges such as capacity issues, lack of a formal branch, multiple sources of property information from institutions pre-1994, and other similar issues. But also, well, I think that we have to recognize that there were various periods where attempts were made to actually compile or improve upon the existing register. And I think perhaps the issues that I've mentioned previously were hampering them. So what we've actually tried to do is enhance the good work that was done in the past, close the existing gaps, and also broaden the range of sources that we look at in terms of compiling the existing register. So I hope that will assist at this time too.
Honourable Member, yes?
Just for clarity, so do I hear you saying that the register is not complete? Do we have completion dates? I see you smiling. I'm not meaning to embarrass you, but from what I heard about your very delicate footsteps there was that there actually is no complete register.
So, sorry, Chair, if perhaps I did not make myself clear. I think the original question was around the historical challenges in the past and why, you know, those problems existed. And I think there was an acknowledgement of the good work that had been done. That's why I think Head of PMT and others earlier indicated that we had a substantially complete asset register. And I think he may have mentioned that we're currently dealing with a number of it's around, I think, 250 properties currently as part of the phase two of the physical verification that we are completing currently. I think he also mentioned about 1,500 properties. Sorry. 1,200 properties or thereabouts where we are not able to appropriately locate and identify them using the GIS system. And what we've actually done is to engage with the Registry of Deeds and also with the Department of the Surveyor General in order to obtain other spatial data in an attempt to cover, you know, the remainder of those properties, which, you know, when you look at the overall number of assets and buildings that we have, we think it's a manageable number thus far. Chair, I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'll give us a few areas. The first one is to compliment the contribution of my colleague, Stanley Henderson, on the EPWP and fraud and corruption in that area. what we find is that most of the fraud and corruption allegations that we hear about are perpetrated at the level of the implementing agents. And EPWP at the national head office will not be involved therein and will not carry any of the budget that is responsible for creating jobs in areas where there are allegations of favoritism and other malpractice and allocation of those jobs. So we don't receive those allegations for investigation. Where we do, and we had instances of referrals with respect to favoritism and the creation of jobs in the manner that the middle of the committee indicated, we do then provide assistance to the third party, and we have done so in the past. Moving on to the issue of missing property, I want to mention that with respect to missing properties, with the quantum and magnitude of the added register of public works, there's a huge risk of missing properties, stolen properties. You will often find that we have properties that are occupied by a third party and we have no idea it's occupied by a third party. So our physical verification process then highlighted a number of properties that were illegally occupied, because as part of the completion of the asset register, one of the elements would be to conduct a physical verification to visit the relevant property. And in doing so, many properties were then identified by the departments that were illegally occupied, and our property management branch in PMT is now embarking on a program to regularize the say of the illegal occupant who are valid lease, or to approach the court for eviction, or to deal with it through whatever process is necessary. So we are beginning to get a grip of that. What I want to mention to your honourable member is that we have a program called Operation Bring Back. Operation Bring Back. Yes. Operation Bring Back is something that the minister relaunched. In fact, it was launched some time back and then relaunched recently within the Public Works Assembly, the Department of Public Works at the national level and throughout 9 provinces, to enable us to work together to identify any of our properties that are illegally occupied on one hand and those on the other that have been illegally transferred or misappropriated from the state. And we've had quite a few leads and red flags identified through the Asset Register Revolve program. And we're dealing with several hundreds, in fact thousands of assets between the public works departments and the provinces as well as ourselves that we're investigating, mainly for illegal occupation, but also illegal transfer. We have found a number of assets of the state that were transferred to private individuals through collusion with members of the chief office or collusion with members of the public service. So we do have that, all by pure deceit on the part of property developers and others who swindle property in the state. There's similar practice to money laundering. Moving on, Chairperson, to the issue of the security upgrade.
Yes?
No, can you tell me that the Apartheid government could turn over the asset register to the current government? So we don't have the handover that was done. That's why the stole those farms, you know, and everything.
Chairperson, that is a very relevant question. In fact, we are investigating certain disposals going as far back as 20 years. Prior to the elections, there were a number of property transfers that took place. In fact, they were trust created also before the elections to transfer huge swathes of land in trust. And there were other illegal transactions as well between local authorities and developers. So that all forms part of the scope of this particular program, but it is a huge undertaking and will require everybody's support and patience. In fact, it will require a good whistleblowing strategy, which I'll cover in a moment. But moving on to the security upgrades at the private residence of the president at Nkandla, I must say categorically that the Department of Public Works will never implement any security upgrades without a request and a security assessment from the security cluster and departments. So we will only implement a request made by the police or the state security agency, and Public Works will then become an implementing agent to implement the security requirement articulated in the security assessment. Now, having said that, we are also developing at this moment in time norms and standards to ensure that we convert the security requirements and assessments in the most economical manner into the site infrastructure. We also need to bear in mind that at present there are a number of assets at the premises, including the clinic and the residence of the steps, that is owned by the state. And in that regard, the department is required to develop a proper maintenance plan to care for those assets. At this moment in time, we have not spent any funds towards maintenance, but instead we are utilizing certain members of our own Durban Regional Office maintenance staff to provide this care. I can assure members of the committee that all of this will be properly budgeted for and placed in our MTAF when required.
One at a time, Honourable Kuala Barnard first.
I'm just very interested, and I'm not questioning you for a moment. The department would never implement and has never implemented upgrades without requests from the security cluster. Okay, that is what she said. And yet, we have a swimming pool and a tick and hawk and a this and a that and a everything lifts and who knows what all. Every bell, whistle and cattle crawl that you can imagine, built by you and your entity. Are you saying the security cluster did actually ask you to do those things? Because you did them.
I believe they're all smiling at me.
Just wait a bit. Just wait a bit. Honorable President. Thank you, sir. Department, through you, sir. We have constitutional duty to discharge here. And the need for specific and thorough oversight have become even bigger because of the Constitution. We would love to have an undertaking by ourselves to the effect that if ever you set your foot again in Ghana with public funds, let us know, right, as a committee. We need to know that we are going back to Ghana because previously they have not effectively stuck to the rules of the game. Now we need to reinforce our ability to do oversight on Ghana. And let me add that we don't expect the department to go back to Ghana before the president has paid what the court has said must pay. You can take that from the pocket. But please, we need to strengthen the rules now and make sure that we don't just go to Uganda, because you could very well get a request in the next month or so that you must go back to Uganda and spend more money. We would love to have, I don't know what kind of instrument we can have to make sure that the department will not let the request of anybody go back to Uganda, you know, without us knowing as a committee. Thank you.
Honorable members, I'm not sure if it's the approach of lunchtime. We don't have to get excited. Pose your questions. The remit of the responsibilities of this committee is very clear. Engage, but let us engage in such a manner that our engagement does not become disagreeable. I noted you members, relax. Relax. You can make your point however sharp without becoming disagreeable or without raising the roof. The next honorable member is Honorable Marop, followed by Honorable Mem Maciel, followed by Honorable Sitoli.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think the question of Honorable Kuala Barnard is relevant to check whether the department to action the security issue it gets the request from the security class. I think this is a fair question. But colleagues, I know that the alliance here, there is no leader of this alliance. But I don't think it is proper for us to debate what is not here. It is correct to say that we are saying as members of the portfolio committee, anything that is not budgeted for, we are going to support. That's the understanding in any other committee. Because when you table the budget here as a department, we approve the budget. So there is no way that my colleague is raising the issue to say you can't go to Uganda without telling us. There's nothing here in the document that is talking about the department going to Uganda. I think the CFO explained it very well to say that we don't have the department that is going to Uganda. And the colleague in front of me even said, no, there is no budget that we are doing. This is the one for maintenance. I don't think we need to put something that is not there. I think I agree with the question raised by the colleague to say, can we get a clarity? The department action, the safety measures in the presidency when they are being requested. That is not there. So if we can get that clarity, because this budget, our oversight is saying that something that is not appearing here in this budget when it's being approved, we are not going to support it. All of us, that is the understanding. It must not be like the individuals of this committee that cannot support. And to say don't go to Uganda before the president pays, I don't think it's something that is here, it's something that is here. It's not something that is here because already the president, before even the Concord come out, he did make a pronouncement to say that he's willing to pay. So let's not debate this matter here because it's not part of this debate. Thank you.
Chairman, with respect to the legislation...
No. Wait. Why are you rushing? I've not given you the opportunity to speak. Relax. Honorable members here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think that my colleague has covered a lot of issues. Indeed, the whole document was presented to us. There was no way where it was written about a budget for Uganda, for people to be raising budget for Uganda. It's just obsession about Uganda of some sort. You know, there's nothing about that one in here, so we don't have to raise it in here. It's just like in the issue of, as we're talking about the asset register for immovable issues. It is also a problematic issue, that one too, because we are quite aware that some of those registers were destroyed deliberately because they acquired those things by, you know, in a false way, or they stolen in fact. And that is why they destroyed all that register that was supposed to. You were supposed to be building on the register that was there before, but it is not there. Because they knew that a lot of those things were stolen from the countries. Thank you.
Because of fraud.
Honorable members, it's a very well-known fact that you are politicians. You can link any issue to what you want to link. But I would like us to remain with what's in front of us. There are tangential issues that can be raised about anything. But let us be circumspect in giving direction to the people that are in front of us. Let us deal with the issues at hand. The other issues, you'll get adequate time to address them. Baba, sorry, you were next.
What you just said, Chair, I understand. There's lots of complaining behind us, but it's our job to ask questions. And it's been made very clear to us there wasn't a budget for Uganda, but nearly 2.5 million rand was spent. So how do we know unless we ask if more isn't being spent?
Honorable,
we can't not ask the questions because people are uncomfortable about the criminality that's gone.
Honorable Kalaban, I would like us to... I'll give you the time to articulate your point. There's no occasion where I've not given you the time to articulate your point. So it will help if all members help me to conduct this meeting in an orderly fashion. I don't want us just to speak when we want to speak. I will give you a chance to talk without fear or favor. I'm not asking you all to agree on everything. This is why I said that there are politicians here. You can link any issue to what you want to articulate. The next speaker was
Honorable Sithole.
Jefferson, first of all, Jefferson, I have a concern about our conduct, because they're supposed to finish our questions. And then after the question, we can make the follow-up. Now we don't know who's who in the zone now and where they are. That's my concern, Jefferson, because now we are starting in Kanta. That's why I'm from Kanta. Really, it worries me. I'm from Kanta. We have only one big salt in Kandla, which is Kofta. So if they say the construction is the development is happening in Kandla, it worries me because we are traveling in a gravel way, in a gravel road. So specifically, we mustn't talk about something that is not in our, because the thing is actually it touched my heart because I'm from Kandla.
Honorable members, I would like us to, the department has made presentations and we have posed a number of questions and made comments which they've taken on board. Allow the department to proffer the answers and you are at liberty to pose whatever question that you think are relevant to those issues that they raised. Let us proceed. You may continue, sir.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, moving on to the issue of legislation, I've consulted the strategic plan, and what we have is that in 2018-19, we will have submitted the public works bill to Parliament in 2018-19. By 2017-18, which is the year after the current year, we will have submitted the CIDB amendment bill to Parliament. And in 2018-19, the same year we submit public works bill, we also have submitted the CBE amendment bill to Parliament. So, Chairperson, it is the response to that query. With respect to the budget cut in the CIDB of 45 million over 3 years, it's clear that the CIDB has got a challenge to deal with. I think one of the problems that they might have had is that in the last 2 years, perhaps, they've had budget surpluses, which they've requested permission or they could request the National Treasury to allow them to utilize for other purposes, including funding legal fees in connection with the collusion matter. So that might have created the wrong perception about the state of wealth and funding of the CIDB. But clearly that needs to be addressed. One of the sources of possible funding is the contractor register function and the fee-raising potential in that particular area. But it's something we need to look at and if necessary revert National Treasury concerned about the impact of the budget cut. With respect to the IDC, I want to compliment what my colleague has said earlier, in that the DPW as well as the entire public works family are signing a protocol with the IDC, not necessarily committing or guaranteeing work to the IDC, but creating a framework for working with the IDC. It's clear that the IDC will need a minimal amount of work from the public works family to survive going forward, and that protocol is intended to achieve it. Certainly at the national level, the National Public Works is starting to engage the IDC at an increasing level going forward. We also had a practice note that my colleague made reference to, but there are concerns, and I think the IDC will address them in their risk management presentation this afternoon or tomorrow. They are lying to a certain extent on the collection of several hundred million rand worth of debt in client departments. It's clear that only a small percentage of that debt will be recoverable, given that it's long outstanding. And our government departments, we work on a year-to-year basis. They don't keep it in the bank and then pay later. So they have a few challenges there, and they have to be watched very closely. Chairperson, in concluding my remarks, with respect to the broader principle of the manner in which we set indicators and targets. What I want to say is that one of my colleagues used an example. That, for example, we've got a target that we investigate all allegations of corruption in 30 days. 100% investigation in 30 days. But there's no 100% of what. Because we don't know how many allegations of corruption we're going to see. But we know that every one of them we will process in 30 days. So we do use a type of efficiency indicator, like the examination rule. We know we want an 80% pass rate, but we're not sure how many students will sit the exam. But when we come to our quarterly reviews through Parliament, we will bring the numbers with us as well, where we evaluate performance. So we will do that. With respect to resources for business intelligence and risk management, what we're saying is that in the public service, we need to internalize the concept of risk management. I'll have to speak a bit louder, Chairperson, to deal with the problem. So, Chairperson, what I'm saying is that from a risk management point of view, risk are events, potential future events that may impede your performance. We're saying that our management need to internalize and their understanding of risk management and how to use it to improve performance by identifying and being aware of these future events and uncertainties. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about training and internalizing risk management in the department. With respect to our whistleblowing policy, Chairperson, it's clear that the whistleblower is more or less our undercover agent in the business environment. And those cases that prosecute where a whistleblower is involved will be cases where we find people guilty, where we detect serious instances of fraud or corruption. So our whistleblowing policy is intended to encourage whistleblowing in the department and elsewhere, and we do engage in a comprehensive awareness campaign to encourage whistleblowing as part of a broader ethics framework. But whistleblowers don't often come forward. Where they do, they're valuable, but they don't always come forward. And I think when we get the opportunity to engage the opportunity on our Operation Bring Back program, we want the entire public to come forward and blow the whistle on illegally transferred properties. It's clear that that's going to be the major source of identifying illegally transferred properties. Chairperson, I think that will then conclude my area. I'll just add two less. On the oversight of the concurrent function, even though it's a constitutionally provided function, public works, and local, municipal, provincial, and national government have their respective roles within the space. This is precisely the point, in that this branch is intended to mobilize the three spheres of government to work together, create a single view of service delivery, not to assume the function of another sphere of government, but to enable the different spheres of government to work together with common service delivery objectives. So the citizen out there doesn't see a local authority and a provincial authority and a national one. They see service delivery, and we need to create a single view of service delivery and work together. What we have is the 120-day program, the PICC, is an example of the potential for us as public works to work together. And we'll be looking at other areas as well to highlight the importance of creating a single view of service delivery and working together. Finally, Chairperson, my most complex question is the number of copies of the APP printed. I can say that 70 so far, 10 to the management in the department, and 60 by law, you're required to put 60 and table at Parliament. So that is all we've done. But after the approval process, we're likely to do more. And distributed to other stakeholders as well. And we take on board the comment that you must use it and read it properly. You mustn't waste paper, kill trees. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. Whilst we have this quiet moment, not so quiet, we have a challenge. We're supposed to move to the other venue, but now when I look at the time that we are left with, I would rather suggest that we do take the presentation by the IDT and then engage with it. If we were to break now, which we can do, and walk down to the other venue, by the time we settle down, it will be 2 o'clock, and we are supposed to move to Parliament by 2:45, so we can decide. But I just see us losing lots of time walking down.
Sorry, Chair, we have to move to Parliament. What? Sorry. There's no plenary. Can we not sit for 5 o'clock?
There's no plenary today. That's fine. If that's the case, I thought there was a plenary today. Then, that's fine. This is the CIDB first. The venue that was secured, I don't know where's that? Committee room what? Committee room 392. That being the case, then I suggest that we have a quick lunch, whatever was brought, and then we go down to the venue. 5 to 2, shall we take 15 minutes to have lunch and then move down to the venue? By the time we get there, it should be 5:30. Thank you very much, good folks. Thank you.